We're starting a new series called Mending Fences today. And I bet you already can guess what we're going to talk about over the next couple weeks. It's forgiveness. Now, this is not an easy topic for many, many, many reasons, but it's a very important topic. As we just saw with this opening clip, this young man who had come back from World War II in the prison camps, drunk and alcoholic, just about family falling apart, marriage falling apart, goes, becomes a Christian, and then feels a conviction to God to go back to Japan to forgive the guards that had abused him so poorly. How would you do that? Most of us have never experienced that type of abuse or that type of trauma or those type of nightmares for years on end. And yet something happened within this man that gave him the power, the authority, the gumption to go back and forgive those that treated him so badly. And over the next number of weeks, we're going to look at some specific stories and some specific Bible passages and ask ourselves the question, how do you do this? How do you live like this? Because I'll tell you what, forgiveness changes the world. You want to know the solution to the problem in the Middle East right now? Forgiveness. In Ukraine, in Afghanistan, in Zambia, in the many places across the world where there is atrocities and horrible things that human beings are doing one to another. The answer is forgiveness through Jesus Christ. Because as we're going to see over the next couple weeks, you cannot truly forgive until you understand that you've been forgiven first and that your debt has been paid, and so that everything that you have, everything that you are, is a direct result of a God who loves you so much that he was willing to die to forgive you. And when you begin to understand that and internalize it and live it out, it transforms the entire world around you. It transforms how you see people, and then you are able to forgive, and then you are able to be the light and to be the hands and feet by forgiving those that have wronged you and served you injustice, because there is lots and lots of injustice in the world. And so today we're going to look at a passage of scripture that many of us know and are very familiar with, and it's the story of Joseph. And if anyone had the reason to hold a grudge, if anyone had a reason to be angry at his brothers, as we're going to see, if anyone had a reason not to forgive his brothers, Joseph was probably one of these prime examples of somebody who should have had that power and that the reason or the rationale to say, I'm not going to forgive these guys because this is what they did to me, and this is directly what happened because of what they did to me. And so if you'd like to follow along, you can try and follow along if you want. I didn't put the scripture up on the screen this morning because we're actually going to read through quite a bit of this story at the end, because I think it gives us the context to understand what's going on here. So this is at the end of Joseph's life. So just to give you a quick, if you haven't watched the movie or you haven't read the story, Joseph's brothers, he's the favored one. He gets sold into slavery. And then once he's into slavery, he gets sold again. He ends up in Potiphar's house. He's working hard. He's doing the right thing. And then he ends up in prison because he refuses to have an affair with the potter's wife. I mean, this guy goes from worse to worse to worse to worse to worse, from slavery to prison. And then he's finally given the opportunity to share this gift that God has given him. And that gift is that he can interpret dreams. And so he's got a couple guys that say, hey, this is my dream. And so he interprets it for them. Those dreams come true. And he says, hey, remember when you get to Pharaoh's court, tell somebody about the injustice that's happened to me. Tell somebody so that I can get out of this place. And of course they forget. Years go by, and then eventually they remember, or somebody remembers, and then he gets an audience with the king who's got this amazing vision, dream that he's had, and Joseph goes back to God, and he prays, and he gets the interpretation of this vision. There's going to be famine in the land, famine for 7 years, 7 great years, and then 7 years of famine, and so he's put in charge of everything. Number two, next to Pharaoh himself. And out of this context, in Canaan, where his brothers had sold him into slavery, where his brothers were still living, they start getting hungry because the famine's worldwide, and so they come to Egypt. Of course, to get some food because Egypt's been smart because of Joseph, and they had 7 years of plenty, and they packed away 7 years because of food because they knew they were going to 7 years of drought. So they show up, and Joseph, out of all the tens of thousands of people that were coming to Egypt to buy grain, Joseph's there when his brothers show up. And so there's this dialogue that we're not going to go through before. There's this first encounter. He doesn't tell them who he is. He sells the grain to them. He pokes them a little bit and says, I want you to come back and I want you to bring my, he doesn't tell him his brother, I want you to bring the other son that you left, which is Benjamin. So Joseph had a biological brother, Benjamin, and then there were 10 other brothers, and the 10 other brothers were the ones that sold him into slavery from a different mother. And so he says, I want you to bring Benjamin next time you come back. Without telling them who he is, because he wants to see Benjamin and he wants to know what's going on. He doesn't tell his brothers who they are. And the reason why they've left Benjamin is because when Joseph was died, his brothers told his father that the wild beast had eaten him or something had happened to him. So his father's heart was broken, and so he wouldn't let Benjamin out of his sight because unfortunately he showed favorites. And so he didn't let Benjamin go. But Joseph wants to see Benjamin. So he says, well, when you come back a second time, make sure you bring Benjamin. So this is the dialogue of what happens when they come back for the second time. I'm reading from Genesis chapter 43, verses 15 and following. So the men took gifts and doubled the amount of silver and Benjamin also. They hurried down to Egypt to present themselves to Joseph. When Joseph saw Benjamin with them, he said to the steward of the house, take these men to my house, slaughter the animal, prepare dinner. They are to eat with me at noon. The man did as Joseph told him and took the men to Joseph's house. Now the men were frightened. They thought, we were brought here because of the silver that was put back into our sacks the first time. So what had happened the first time was they bought all this grain. And then Joseph says to the stewards, put all the money back in the sacks. So they're on their journey back home and they open up their sacks to look at the grain and they find all their money back in there. So they're thinking, uh-oh, he's going to think we stole. And so they're getting a little freaked out at this point. We were brought here because of the silver that was put back into our sacks the first time. He wants to attack us and overpower us and seize us as slaves and take our donkeys. So they went up to Joseph's steward and spoke to him at the entrance house. Please, sir, they said, we came down here to buy, the first time to buy food. But at the place where we stopped at the night, we opened up our sacks and each of us found his silver the exact weight in the mouth of the sack. So we brought it back with us. We have also brought additional silver with us to buy food. We don't know who put our silver in our bag. It's all right, he said. Don't be afraid. Your God, the God of your father, has given your treasure in your sacks. I received your silver. Then he brought Simeon out to them. Simeon was the one brother that got left there as collateral or as equity. The steward took the men into Joseph's house, gave them water to wash their feet, provided fodder for their donkeys. They prepared their gifts for Joseph's arrival at noon because they had heard that they were to eat there. When Joseph came home, they presented him with gifts they had brought into his house, and they bowed down before him to the ground. He asked them how they were, and then he said, how about your aged father you told me about? Is he living? They replied, your servant, our father, is alive and well, and they bowed low to pay him honor. If you know the story, this is the fulfillment of a dream that Joseph had when he was a young man that got him dumped into slavery in the first place and got his brothers all jealous about him. And here they are, bowing at his feet, not even realizing who he is. As he looked about and saw his brothers, brother Benjamin, his own mother's son, he asked, is this your youngest brother, the one you told me about? And he said, God be gracious to you, my son. Deeply moved at the sight of his brother, Joseph hurried out and looked for a place to weep. He went into his private room and wept there. He still hasn't told them who he is, and they haven't figured it out. After he had washed his face, he came out controlling himself and said, serve the food. They served him by himself and brothers by themselves and the Egyptians who ate with them by themselves because Egyptians could not eat with Hebrews, for that is detestable to Egyptians. The men had been seated before him in order of their ages from the firstborn to the youngest, and they looked at each other in astonishment. When portions were served from Joseph's table, Benjamin's portion was five times as much as everyone's else. So they feasted and drank freely with them. Apparently Joseph didn't learn one of the problems that his father had with the whole idea of favoritism. Now Joseph gave these instructions to the steward of the house. Fill the men's sack with as much food as they can carry and put each man's silver in the mouth of his sack. They put the cup and then put my cup, the silver one, in the mouth of the youngest one's sack, along with the silver for his grain. And they did as Joseph said. As morning dawned, the men were sent on their way with their donkeys. They had not gone far from the city when Joseph said to his stewards, go after those men at once, and when you catch up with them, say to them, why have you repaid good with evil? Isn't this the cup my master drinks from, also that he uses for divination? This is a wicked thing you have done. When they caught up with them, he repeated these words to them, but they said to him, why does my lord say such things? Far from be it from our servants to do anything like that. We even brought you back to the land of Canaan, the silver we found inside our mouths of our sacks. So why would we steal silver or gold from your master's house? If any of your servants is found to have it, he will die, and the rest of us will become the lord's slaves. They shouldn't have said that. Very well, then, he said, let it be as you say. Whoever is found to have it will become my slave. The rest of you will be free from blame. Each of them quickly lowered his sack to the ground and opened it. Then the steward proceeded to search, beginning with the oldest and ending with the youngest. And I bet you all know who ended up with it. And the cup that was found was in Benjamin's sack. At this, they tore their clothes. They all loaded up their donkeys and returned to the city. Joseph was still in the house when Judah, his brothers, came in, and they threw themselves to the ground before him. Joseph said, what is it that you have done? Don't you know, like a man like me, and find things out by divination? What can we say, my lord? Judah replied. What can we say? How can we prove our innocence? God has uncovered your servant's guilt. Listen to this. We are now my lord's slaves. We ourselves are the one who is found to have the cup. But Joseph said, far be it from me to do such a thing. Only the man who is found to have the cup will become my slave. The rest of you go back to your father in peace. Then Judah went up to him and said, please, Lord, let your servant speak a word to my Lord. Do not be angry with your servant, though you are equal to Pharaoh himself. My Lord asked his servants, do we have a father or brother? And he answered, we have an aged father, and there's a young son born to him in his old age. His brother is dead, Joseph, and he is the only one of his mother's sons left, and his father loves him. Then you said to your servants, bring him down so I can see him. And we said to my Lord, the boy cannot leave his father. If he leaves him, his father will die. But you told us, servants, unless your youngest brother comes down with you, we will not see your face again, which means they won't be able to buy food. When we went back to our servant father, we told him what my Lord had said. Then our father said, go back and buy a little more food. But we said, we cannot go down, only if our youngest brother, Benjamin, is to go with us. We cannot see the man's face unless our younger brother is with us. Your servant, my father, said to us, you know that my wife bore me two sons. One of them went away from me, and I said, he has surely been torn to pieces. That was Joseph. And now I have not seen him since. If you take this one from me too, and harm comes to him, you will bring my gray head down to the grave. So now, if the boy is not with us when I go back to your servant father, my father, and if my father, whose life is closely bound up with this boy's life, sees that the boy isn't there, he will die. Your servants will bring gray head upon our father down to the grave. Your servant guaranteed the boy's safety to my father. I said, if I do not bring him back to me, I will bear the blame before you, my father, all my life. Now, please, then, let your servant remain here as my lord's slave. This is Judah the oldest, who was the primary instigator that got Joseph thrown in the pit and sold into slavery in the first place. He's taking ownership and offering his body, himself, in place of his son Benjamin. Then Joseph could no longer control himself. Before all of the attendants, he cried out, have everyone leave the room in my presence. So there was no one with Joseph when he made himself known to his brothers, and he wept so loudly that the Egyptians heard him and the Pharaoh's household heard about it. Joseph said to his brothers, I am Joseph. Is my father living? But his brothers were not able to answer him because they were terrified at his presence. Then Joseph said to his brothers, come close to me. When they had done so, he said, I am your brother Joseph, the one you sold into slavery. Do not be distressed, and do not be angry with yourselves for selling me, because it was to save lives that God sent me ahead of you. For 2 years now there has been famine in the land, and for the next 5 years there will also be no plowing or reaping. But God sent me ahead to preserve for you a remnant of earth, to save your lives by great deliverance. He forgives his brothers. That's pretty intense. If you were given all the authority and the power, second to Pharaoh, second to none, and somebody had wronged you so gravely, for most of us, if somebody just posted something on Facebook, what would you do with that type of power? And Joseph plays with them a little bit. I think part of it's just to see their intentionality and see if they've changed. And part of it is Joseph is still far from a perfect person. But in the end, when he reveals himself, he forgives his brother and his brothers and said, God did this. And he forgives them. Forgiveness, I think, out of this passage is a process. I think sometimes we think, hey, if I just forgive the person, everything will go away. All the pain will go away. All the solutions will happen. There'll be reconciliation and everything will be okay again. And the reality is that's not quite how it happens for most of us. And it wasn't for Joseph either. It would have taken a long time for them to go all the way to Canaan the first time and all the way back and all the way there, eat all the food and then wait and to come back again. This is not something that just was a quick fix or a quick overnight. You're forgiven and everything's okay. This took time. This took energy. And Joseph's mind was probably had many sleepless nights wrestling with what he was going to do if his brothers came back. And what would he do if his brothers came back and they didn't bring Benjamin? And what if they did come back and they did bring Benjamin like they did? And then what? It's a process. But there's a couple of key elements here, I think, that help us as we think about this process, as we deal with forgiveness in our life. And they're the things that Joseph does that really helps us. And the first one is that Joseph focuses on God's blessing. Joseph could have been the type of individual who focused on, yeah, well, you guys put me in prison. And yeah, you guys threw me in a thing. You were going to kill me. And then you sold me into slavery. And then you don't know the rest of my story, guys. It even got worse from there. Then I ended up being a slave. And then I had to wash floors all the time. And I wasn't the favored one anymore. And then I had somebody throw themselves at me. And I did the right thing. I didn't have an affair with a person. And because of that, she got angry. She lied and she cheated. There was injustice. I got thrown into prison. I was there. I worked hard in the prison. He could have, you know, just dumped the whole story. Look at how bad it is. Look at how bad. But he didn't do that. He instead focuses on God and what he had done and said, hey, God brought me through all of that to bring me here to deliver you. He focuses on God's blessing. At this point, he's been married to Pharaoh's daughter. He has kids of his own. He's been blessed. He's the head of a huge nation. He's been wise because God's given the ability and his gift to interpret dreams. This is a guy who's been able to look at God's blessings and focus on them rather than all of the injustice that happened in his life because there was plenty of it. Have you ever heard the story of Corrie ten Boom? In World War II, she was a lady that was hiding Jews in Holland and got caught. And so her and her sister and her family ended up going to the concentration camps. Ravensbrück, which is the terribly over-infested, crowded and flea-infested barracks, was where she ended up with her sisters. They had been able to miraculously smuggle a Bible into the camp that they would read. And in the Bible, they would look for things to give thanks for, even in the misery that they found themselves in. Betsy, her sister, decided that as they read the Bible, they were to make a list and they were to think of things that they were supposed to thank God for. This was too much for Corrie, who said she couldn't do such a thing. But Betsy insisted, so Corrie gave in and prayed to God, thanking him for everything, including the fleas that were in the barracks. Over the next several months, such a wonderful but curious thing happened. They found that the guards never entered the barracks. This meant that the women were not assaulted. It also meant that they were able to do the unthinkable, which is to hold open Bible, to read a Bible and hold Bible studies. It meant that they were able to do this in a Nazi concentration camp. And through this, countless numbers of women came to faith in Jesus Christ. Only at the end did they discover why the guards had left them alone and would not enter the barracks. It was because of the fleas. Sometimes, or arguably many times, it's so easy in our life when we're talking about forgiveness and injustice and things that people have done wrong against us or said about us or whatever it is to focus in on all the negativity and the negative things that are going on. And there's fleas and, oh, you put me in slavery. Oh, I ended up in jail. And we kind of do this thing that's natural. We try to get people on our side. And, oh, poor me. Everything's bad. And everything's like, this is so horrible. And feel sorry for me. And it's like, you know what's a better thing to do? Praise God and look for his blessings, as small or as great as they are. Joseph does that. Now you could argue, well, Joseph's the, he's got all this power and all this authority right now, but he went through some injustice that got him there that most of us will never, ever have to experience. He hit rock bottom, and all the way through, he praised God, worked hard, and counted God's blessings. Crazy. Joseph also focuses on this fancy term on God's sovereignty, that God is in control. He says to his brothers, he says, God did this for a reason. Don't blame yourselves. Really? Like I still say, I could say God did this for a reason, but, you know, kick him under the bus a little bit and feel a little bit guilty because you guys did, you know, I had to go through all this stuff and I, you know, why didn't God? He didn't do that. Because he was not only just focusing on God's blessings, but he was focusing on God's control, God's sovereignty, that he had a plan, that everything that he was doing was for a reason. And this is an amazing lesson for us because there's a lot of injustice in the world. Hey, there's been a lot of injustice in the Christian church. When the Christian church all over the world for thousands of years, there's been people that have been dying for their faith, and that is a huge injustice. And many of them probably struggle and ask why and how and if. And many of them also would be able to count God's blessings. If you read some of the testimonies of those people that are stuck and being persecuted and you read them, you go, what is wrong with these people? You ever want to do something interesting? There's a whole bunch of accounts and writings of the early church. And there's writings of these people that gave their lives for Christ, and they were able to write what their story was and what they were thinking before they were thrown into lion's den or thrown into the arenas or, you know, for sport and entertainment, mauled and killed to death. And there's some amazing testimonies of people that are focusing on God's presence and how they feel close to God and how he's there with them and how they feel so blessed. And you're like, what? How? Really? You're going to be eaten by a lion. You're going to be mauled by a bear. You're going to be decapitated by gladiators. And you're focusing on the blessings and the sovereignty of God, that he's in control. What is wrong with you? But they have this amazing ability that as they look at God's blessings in their life, as small as they might be or large, and they focus on the bigger picture, knowing that God is in control, that his sovereignty reigns, they're able to get through absolutely anything. C.H. Spurgeon said, there is no attribute more comforting to God's children, to those of us that follow Jesus Christ, than God's sovereignty. Under the most adverse circumstances and the most severe trials, they believe that sovereignty has ordained their afflictions and sovereignty overrules them and that sovereignty will sanctify them. There is nothing for which children ought to more earnestly contend to than the doctrine that their master is master over all of creation. The kingship of God over all the works of his hands, not just the good times or the good things, but over everything. It's not easy when you're going through difficulty. It's not easy when you're suffering. It's not easy when you're at the hand of injustice. It's not easy when family members betray you or talk behind your back. It's not easy when people at workplace cheat and steal and put the blame on you. There's all kinds of injustice that goes on in the world. But when we focus on God's blessings and his sovereignty, it gives us the ability to see a bigger picture and to be able to forgive. Last thing that I love here of Joseph is that he's cautious of emotion. A couple of times there, he's just about overcome, right? His brothers are there, and I would imagine there's got to be some mixed emotions going on in Joseph's life because he's got the power to, in a second, he's got the power to put him in prison for 7 years just like he was. He's got the power to do anything. And there's all of this emotion and turmoil in his life because, like, yes, I believe in God's blessings and yes, I believe in God's sovereignty, but here's the people that are responsible for the injustice that went on in my life. And so, and it gets so crazy that he has to run out of the room and explodes with emotion and basically goes to his room to weep and cry. And some of that's because these are his brothers and he hasn't seen them for years and decades, and he's got all kinds of news to share with them because he's got God's blessings, he's got a wife, he's got a family, God's given him this gift, he can interpret dreams, and he had all kinds of great things to tell them and great stories as well too. And so there's all of this emotion, all this turmoil, and I would imagine there were sleepless nights as he was trying to think, what am I going to do when my brothers come back? And he's cautious of emotion. Very cautious. I was doing some research this week, and this is actually true. There's an amusement facility in Canada in Calgary, and the name is the Thunderdrome Amusement Park. And you can actually go into something called a rage room. And in this rage room, guests pay to go into this rage room, and you can relieve stress by smashing things. So they can set it up however you want. So for example, if you've gotten a really bad work experience and you want to take out some anger on, you know, your work, your environment, they'll fill the place with office desks and mirrors and whatever else it is. And for 45 minutes, you get to walk into that created office space and you get to smash everything to pieces. And the idea is after you come out, guests are feel better, they're sweating, but they feel better. They've smashed printers, they've smashed desks, they've smashed computer screens, but they feel so much better because they've relieved all kind of stress. It's about $20 a person. Sounds pretty good, doesn't it? But what it demonstrates is that we are emotional beings. There's different personality types. Some of us are stuffers. Some of us are exploders when it comes to conflict. But at the end of the day, if you do not learn how to deal with your emotions in a healthy way, they will eat you alive. And Joseph doesn't have a psychiatry degree or a PhD in medicine, but he's wrestling and dealing with this in his life as his brothers come back into the picture. Be cautious of your emotions when you're dealing with forgiveness. Root them in your experience of God's blessings and his sovereignty so that you can do the right thing, so that you can extend the hand of grace and God's forgiveness to those that have done you injustice and wronged you. It's not easy, but nobody ever said it would be. The cross, as we celebrated last weekend and through Easter season, was not easy for Jesus, but he went to it to forgive us. And so as we will see over the next couple of weeks, we are called to do the same to those around us, to forgive them. So this week, as we go from this place, here's just a couple of things to think about. First of all, this week, focus on God's blessings. Focus on God's sovereignty, his control in your life. You're here for a reason. God takes you through the good times, the high peaks, but he also takes you through the low peaks, the injustice, the difficult times, and he has a reason. You might not see it, you might not know it, and you might not ever know it until you stand before Jesus Christ on Judgment Day, but God is in control. And as you focus on his blessings and his sovereignty, focus on breathing. Just breathe. Joseph ran into his room, bawled his eyes out, and that's okay. Just to breathe. To gather his composure so he could come back in and deal with his brothers again. And in the end, when he finally loses it, when he tells his brothers who he really was, what an awesome picture of reconciliation. Not all of us will get that, but Joseph did, and it's pretty powerful. This week, focus on God's blessings and his sovereignty, and we will continue the conversation about forgiveness over the next couple of weeks. Let's pray. Jesus, we thank you that foremost that you came as we celebrated in the Easter season and you died on a cross to forgive us. And for some of us, we might think, well, that's not a big thing because I haven't done so many bad things. And whatever it is that you've done or haven't done, small or great, the good news is that Jesus has come and died on a cross to forgive us. And whether it's small or massive, Jesus died for you. Because that small sin or that large sin is what separates us from God. There's no measuring stick in God's kingdom. And so he offers you and me forgiveness. If you've never received Jesus Christ's forgiveness, you're here this morning or you're listening online, this is the good news of the gospel of Jesus Christ, that he loves you so much that he forgives you. You might have been in the most darkest spot you could ever be as a human being, and God still reached down his hand through his son, Jesus Christ, and take your hand and say, I forgive you, and I love you. And he'll embrace you, just as Joseph embraced his brothers, because he loves you. For the rest of us that have a relationship with you, Jesus, there's so much injustice in the world. Sometimes it's overwhelming. And sometimes it consumes our thoughts. Sometimes it keeps us up at night. When this happens, help us, like Joseph, to focus in on your blessings and to focus in on your sovereignty, to remember and to realize that you are in control, that you are all-powerful, and you are the King of Kings, and you are still on the throne when everything in our life seems to be falling apart. And that is good news. We give you praise and we give you honor, Jesus. Amen.